Oh my God, we made it to episode number 40 of the Canadian Comedy Hall of Fame podcast. I'm Chad Noonan. Thanks for listening. This has been an amazing run. We have done, I think, 83 interviews-ish on this podcast so far. By the way, if I'm speaking with a slight lisp, it's because I'm whitening my teeth right now. I'm like that much of a diva. And that's not good hosting. That's not good hosting skills. And you know what? I really should bring A-plus hosting to this show today, because we have two people who are known for their hosting. Two phenomenal hosts. In just a minute, I'm going to bring on Mark Summers. But first, I have a host who hasn't been in the game as long as Mark. Mark is a Nickelodeon legend from back in the day. It's Hunter Marsh. Hunter's best known for hosting shows like E! News Nightly Pop. He hosted Sugar Rush on Netflix. His social media presence is huge. He has over 300,000 followers on social media and 2 million likes on TikTok. And he is the host of season 4 of this amazing show called Blown Away, which got kicked off March 9th on Netflix. This show's amazing. It features glass blowing, 10 glass blowers from Canada and the US that brave the heat in this grueling competition to see if they can push those creative limits and win the largest grand prize in the series history. It's season 4. It kicks off March 9th. Had a blast talking with Hunter. He's more than just a host. He's got a ton of comedy knowledge, and he does a little stand-up himself. It was great. Enjoy this interview with Hunter Marsh on episode number 40 of the Canadian Comedy Hall of Fame podcast. First of all, did you survive the Facebook Instagram outage? Did you have to deal with that?
Oh, is that what that was?
Yeah. It was like a worldwide outage.
I think at this point, I'm just kind of used to knowing once a year, it's not going to work. And mm-hmm. at that point, I'll pay attention to my girlfriend.
Yeah, you look up from your phone for a moment.
We were both in bed. I was like, is your Instagram not working? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, I love you.
Is this when we talk at this point? Is there anything on your mind?
Yeah.
It's so funny how people like freak out online about it. Of course, I want to talk about the show Blown Away, which is just like a smash hit. That was a glass pun. It's a huge hit. You're coming on here for season 4. The show is Canadian produced, so that's why it's of interest to us and why they reached mm-hmm. out to us to promote it. Where did they film the show?
They shot it in the crown jewel of Canada, which is Hamilton.
Oh my God, Hamilton. That's that's great. I was just at a comedy festival in Hamilton for the Hall of Fame last week. So
that's great. When I got this show, I was so excited. And then they were like, you shoot in Hamilton, Canada. And I was like, that's amazing. It sounds prestigious as can be. And then I posted on my Instagram story saying, so excited I got this show. I'm going to Hamilton, Canada. If anyone's from Hamilton, what should I do? And the first message I got was leave. and I actually went and I was there for 6 weeks, which is a long time to be in any city besides your own. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. I thought Hamilton was, coming from LA, it's got its ups and downs like anywhere else, but it was really, it was cute. People seemed really nice. And that's all I care for, you know?
Did you do stand up in Hamilton?
I did. I did stand up.
Levity?
At Levity a few times.
Nice. That's awesome. Levity's great. That's where I was. Yeah. Last week. Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully if we do another season, I'll be able to go back and do a lot more there. Cause I did it like 3 or 4 times at Levity. And then I did it a few times at Yuck Yucks in Toronto.
Okay.
And I would just kind of drive in, and it was a cool experience for me. Is like, you know, I'm kind of still new to the stand-up world, mm-hmm. but that was a great opportunity to get in front of whatever 250, 300 people of like people who really come to comedy shows. That was also my first time performing outside of LA. Because I've been working and I haven't had a lot of time to really grind away and go to Nashville and, you know, Detroit and perform at these comedy clubs that everyone gets a chance to. And LA is not a great place to do stand-up because most people mm-hmm. don't really care to be there, like to watch the comedy. Everyone's judgy. Like, I'm funnier than that guy. Why don't I have a TV show? In Canada, everyone was just so loving. They were so excited to get out of the cold weather and get into a comedy club and laugh.
It's funny because Canadians go out to comedy clubs because they're comedy fans. Where mm-hmm. I feel like a place like LA, not so much New York, but LA, they go there because it's a night out. It's like something to do as a night out. They're not necessarily there for the stand up, you know?
And in LA too, especially with, you know, the, I'm forgetting all the names of the clubs out here, but now there's kind of been this revival of stand-up comedy, and all the big stand-up comics are doing drop-ins at the Laugh Factory and at the Improv. Now it's not even just a night to go out. It's a night to like go sightsee and see who, and kind of like star watch, which is a bummer when I come up and then I'm like, hey, I hosted Sugar Rush. And then they're like, you're not Dave Chappelle. Get off the stage.
Yeah. It's that can happen in any club, though. That happened to me with Tom Green dropping in. So Tom Green drops in.
Canadian comedy Hall of Fame. Is he in the Hall of Fame?
He's not yet, but he is for sure going to be a Hall of Famer. He is a legend. Yeah. But then I come up next, and it's like, here I am. Listen to my joke. That's tough. That's really hard.
Yeah.
Where did stand up like come in for you? You said it's like you're relatively new to this, and how long have you been doing it?
I had always been interested in it, but I just got really lucky at a young age, and I was working really hard and doing exactly what I wanted to, which is being in this industry as an intern and then a PA and then a producer. And I just was so consistently working from 19 to 30. From the very bottom all the way to hosting, you know, the shows I got to host. Mm-hmm. And the whole time, every time I'd be like, oh, I really want to do stand up. And then I would go to a club and I would feel like I'm going to explode internally. And I was so freezing, but I was sweating. I would get so nervous at the prospect of going up on stage, which is crazy because I'd be on shows, you know, in front of 150 crew members doing my routine and doing, you know, improvising with all the contestants and whatever show it was. And then finally I just bit the bullet and I was like, I'm going to do it. And so I did it once in New York and I loved it. And then I did it again in New York and I bombed and I was like, I'm good for 5 or 6 years. And then just recently maybe at the beginning of last year, end of the year before, I started doing stand-up really regularly, went to like the lowest of low open mics you can, where it's like you're performing for 4 other comedians who are just, everyone's sad to be there. And it was a real like good change of pace for me to experience like being an absolute beginner at something. Because I think everyone gets comfortable in their life, even if you're not in the industry, no matter what you do, you get comfortable. And so for me, this was like putting my soul through the car wash. I was just like every night nervous. I would go up and I'd either get a laugh or I wouldn't. And then, I mean, luckily I had a lot of experience presenting, so my presence on stage was decent and good, and that carried a lot of the weight. It just was a matter of writing and learning how to pace things, learning how to not abandon jokes midway through if they weren't working, learning how to take control of the crowd when maybe they don't want to be there, maybe they really do and they're rooting for you. So it was just an amazing experience that I could not recommend more to people who have any interest in being an entertainer. Is like, just go to an open mic, even if it's out of your own city where nobody will ever know you, and just feel what it feels like. You'll appreciate art and comedy more.
I feel like those open mic crowds, I get more nervous for them than like those the Yuck Yucks room is the totally. One I do a lot. So like, I'm more nervous for the 10 people at a back of a bar than, like you said, like 200 at Yuck Yucks, where, you know, because if you don't get one of those 10 people, then you can really not get any of them. You know, if you don't get one person in a 200 person room, then that doesn't matter as much. You know, it's nerve wracking.
Yeah. And it's such a dark, twisted world where you have to go into those 5-10 person rooms for so long before you ever get to the 200 person room. So you never get to experience like what real comedy fans are like until you get to a point where you're that good. So it's got this huge barrier of entry.
I want to get back to the show Blown Away, which March 9th on Netflix here in Canada. Did you try glass blowing when you did this?
I did.
How insanely hard is this?
Oh, well, you know what's funny is I'm a painter, and I had a lot of, that's one of the reasons they hired me, is I've done a lot of painting. This one behind me is my dad's painting, but I've done a ton of painting over the years, and I showed the producers during our Zoom call before the show, and I think that was what cinched it for me. And so when I got there, I had this idea that, like, oh, if I just do what I did for painting, like really pay attention, learn from these people, because to learn how to paint, I just watched YouTube videos. So for me being on set, I was like, oh, I'll just watch these live YouTube videos of people glass blowing and I'll learn how to do it. And I kept telling my partner in crime, Catherine Gray, I was like, oh, when I glass blow, I'm going to do a balloon bear, similar to like a Jeff Koons style balloon dog, balloon, you know, rabbit, whatever. I want to do like a balloon bear. And she's like, try a cup. And I was like, yeah, I'll do the cup. But then after that, guess what? Balloon bear. And they were all like, I kept asking all these questions. I'm like, how do I do this? How do I do this? And finally, when I got the chance, they gave me one day to glass blow because I think they were afraid I was going to burn half my face off. And I did it. I blew a balloon bear with the help of, you know, a professional glass blower. But I mean, I took as much of the reins as I could, because it really is a partner. It's a partner dance. It's not the best balloon bear in the world, but I'm really proud of it.
That's amazing. I like how they're like, just start with a cup.
Oh, they were like,
dream big.
I was like, hey, what are the odds I can do this? They're like, what are the odds that you could go into the NFL right now and score a touchdown? And I was like, you're talking to the wrong guy. I think I could.
Yeah. I'm athletic. I could do this. That's so funny. The one thing that gives me anxiety about watching the show is I feel like people are going to burn themselves the whole time. I just watch it. I'm like, this is when somebody burns themselves. And it's amazing that they don't. They do. But it's not like,
it's not a career-ending.
It's not the hazard of the job. It feels like they're just like, oh, well.
But I think it's also like how you'd be afraid that a chef in a kitchen using, you know, all metal handle things and using a knife is going to burn themselves or cut themselves. And it's like they do all the time, but they just power through it. You know, their hands are so callous to heat. I mean, even when I was doing the glass blowing, so, you know, for those that don't know, there's a pipette or a pipe. And when I was doing the pipe, you're picking up this glass in this furnace that's, you know, 2000 something degrees. And when you pull it out, you have to cool the glass in water, which is where all that steam comes from, right when they pull it out. But if your hand touches the pipe that was being cooled and it wasn't cooled enough, you just immediately go, ah! And it's like you touch a hot pan over and over and over again when you're learning. And you still want
to
do it.
Wild to me. What an art form. It's incredible. You mentioned your dad who did that painting. That painting's amazing. Your dad is on a cold plunge, I have seen.
Yeah.
Which I recently started cold plunging. Benefits are amazing, but how much is your dad just seems like he hates cold plunging so much?
Well, my dad hates everything. And so he wants to retire to Costa Rica. He wants to just be able to surf and do all that stuff. So that's, you know, I'm hoping for a season 5 of Blown Away so I can help contribute to that fund. But he hates the cold with a passion. And so, I mean, I started the whole thing. So I'm like, I want you to do something good for your health, but I also wanted to like get brand deals and help him retire. And we actually got to like 30 something thousand followers, which was cool. Like it was a stupid little experiment. But he's gone in twice now. He said he felt great afterwards. And so I'm hoping that the next step is that he'll go get his prostate checked, or he'll go to a doctor and get some of those skin spots checked out. But he hates doctors. He'll never go. I just want him to live forever, you know, so I'm doing what I can.
Yeah, no. And they say the study and research behind cold plunging is amazing. It's awesome. Here's a question I always ask everyone. It's about internet movie database, IMDb, and how it's never right for people. I don't think anybody's page is correct. So I'm asking you, do you know your first credit on IMDb?
You know what's weird, though, is like as a TV host, very few of my credits are on there anyway, because it's not like unscripted stuff rarely makes it on. I think I have like more credits for being a camera operator than I do being in front of the camera or something crazy like that.
That is true. Yeah.
I don't know. My first credit might be, I have no idea. Do you know? You must.
Yeah, I do. It's called Waiting for Dawn. Waiting for Dawn. It was a short film, I believe, where you played somebody called Owen in 12. That is what I am. 2012.
I'm gonna look this up. I don't even know what that is. Waiting for Dawn, Hunter March. Actually, what if it's bad? I don't want people to find it. No, it looks like it's just on IMDb and it exists nowhere else in the world.
That's what I mean. This is never right. This is like where people go industry-wise to find out about anybody. A lot of people grab their research from there. And my theory is that no, correct. Nobody has a perfect IMDb. And you've proved me here. You were never in something called Waiting for Dawn.
You know what? I could have been. I don't know. I mean, there was a lot of things I said yes to back in the old college days.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But I do think... for the IMDb stuff, I tried to go in and change it at one point because I was like, I think my biggest credit on there was that I was in the Emoji Movie for one line, but they don't say one line. They just give me credit for being in the Emoji Movie. And I was like, I don't want people who want to hire me for Blown Away to think I have just done one line in a animated film that bombed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I tried to change it. And then IMDb was literally like, you don't understand how big the Emoji Movie is on searchability.
Do you know what you're trying to delete here? You're lucky to have the Emoji Movie. You are.
It's the only thing that gives me residuals.
Oh my God. That's funny. That's great.
Yeah, because everything else has been like Netflix or unscripted content, you know, on cable, which doesn't re-air. And so every like 2 months, I'll get a check for like $60 and I'll, you know, look at my dad and I'll go, you know, you get 10% of this, bud. You're $6 closer to going to Costa Rica.
It's funny. This isn't the first time the Emoji Movie has come up on this podcast. I can't remember where. I'm going to have to go back through the archives, but it has definitely come up before. There's some Canadian comedy connection to the Emoji Movie. What is like your dream? I mean, you're a great host. You've hosted amazing shows, been on E and all these awesome. What is like your dream hosting job? Where you're like, if I could go host that, it would be blank.
It's so funny because it really does. It has changed a lot. When I was younger, it was late night. You know, I think everybody in hosting wanted to either be, you know, Kimmel or Fallon or whatever. For me, it was Conan. I really loved Conan. I think all comedy fans usually lean that way when it comes to late night hosts. But over time, I've really just fallen in love with these obscure niche shows that, you know, like Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee is probably the biggest example of like what a niche show could be, where it really is in the title of like, hey, that's all it is. That's all you're getting. But then you can go as like, you know, the other big one would be like a Hot Ones would be cool. But for me, I really love YouTube. I started a YouTube channel with my best friend called Poppy's Studios, and
it's great. I love those. I love that style of video to begin with, but like the one where your dad picks a date for you, and stuff like that. I love that style of video.
Me too. It's really passive watching, but that's the thing, is it's passive only if it's done well. If you can put it on and you're not distracted, but you're enjoying it the whole time, that's a really cool video. And it's 30 minutes of content that you just watch. It's the same as a television show, except we produce every episode for like $4,000 and everybody else is producing television that's 30 minutes long for $200,000. And I know that it's nowhere near the same caliber in a lot of respects, but in terms of how it connects to the audience, in terms of what it gives us the opportunities to do, like we're just coming up with new concepts all the time. I shot a show when I was younger called Teaching Friends to Drive Stick. And I bought an old stick shift car, put two GoPros in it. And I just never released it because I was like, it's a liability. I'm putting people on Hollywood Boulevard in a stick shift that cost me $1,500 and they don't know how to drive. But it was teaching celebrities to drive stick. And now we're just going to do that show again. And to me, that's cool. I would rather do that almost all day and night than go on to like a really big behemoth of a show that's hard to turn and it's got to go a specific way. Working with networks is really overwhelming if you are the creative type who wants to just make moves on a dime. That's one reason why I really love Blown Away, is because they are so cool and laid back. And yeah, it's Netflix, but Blue Ant and Marble, when we were there, it was like, they were like, do you want to do this? And I was like, can I? That's the coolest thing, you know, like whether it was go in and blow glass for a day or we need you to do some walk-ins right now while there's an emergency happening. It's just like, they're very like, where's the action? Let's go. And that was really fun. So if it wasn't another big thing, it would definitely just be more YouTube.
The community I live in, like glass blowing is kind of big around here. There's a lot of like studios that do it. And it's a very like artsy type feel, like very like flowers and art. And I feel like the show like reflects the community of glass blowers really well as to. The other thing is, I love the shorts too, like on your shows that you make on YouTube. You have those like bite size shorts that you can edit them down into, which is great. You know, you don't have the 30 minutes to watch one, but you still can get a little content. Those really make it, you know?
Yeah. It's so crazy that we shoot this 30 minute thing and we have about 20 to 30 clips for every video. And some of our series, we did this live show called Crowd Pleasers, which we're doing again in May. And we do want to bring to Canada actually. But I think that got like 1 million or 2 million views long form. So on YouTube, and then I think it got like 50 to 150 million views short form across all these different apps. And that's insane to me, because I've done plenty of television shows that are very difficult to cross 200,000 viewers, let alone 50 million.
Yeah, the power of the internet now is insane.
Crazy.
And the fact that it was down for a couple hours today.
Oh my gosh. Got lost. Don't even remind me.
I know. Craziness. I always end on this question. I know you don't know who's in and who's out of the Canadian Comedy Hall of Fame, but probably in your travels, you've encountered some Canadians who are in comedy. So when you think of like a Canadian who's a Hall of Famer, who do you think of? Who comes to mind?
Is this where a lot of the Americans start Googling?
This is where some of them struggle. Yeah. And that's fine.
I mean, for me, it would be Jim Carrey. I think growing up, absolutely, I was just an absolute Jim Carrey fanatic. I think I watched, you know, when you're a kid and you have divorced parents and you live in a really bad part of town with your dad on the weekends, and your mom has like a rack of Blu-rays, like of every movie you've ever want to watch, but your dad has two VHS tapes and one of them doesn't work. The one that did work was The Mask. And so I watched The Mask probably 200 times. Does everyone else relate to what I just said, by the way?
I think so. I think that's relatable. Okay. Definitely the like, you go somewhere and there's no option for you to watch. And it's always like, I thought you were going to say Ace Ventura, but like the same.
I mean, it was all of them for me. Like once that Mask tape got a little burnt out, I think my mom heard that we were watching The Mask and enjoying it at my dad's house. And I think competitively she was, well, what if I got Liar Liar, Ace Ventura, Ace Ventura 2, movies with Jim that haven't even come out yet.
Bruce Almighty.
Bruce Almighty. It's coming out in like 15 years. You're going to love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we ended up, Liar Liar was another one that the blue pen, I always thought, how crazy would, like, is that possible? Can you lie?
I always that when I, like, I will quote that one line as a joke, all like, this pen is royal blue all the time. Yeah. Like that is like an ongoing bit I do when I'm like, I think when I was signing my divorce agreement, I might have made this pen is royal blue.
Lawyers.
Just to bring it full circle too, Jim Carrey started at Yuck Yucks in Toronto. I don't know if you knew that, but that was where he started comedy. So to bring the conversation around, that must have been cool to be in the club he started in.
Yeah. And that's the other thing too, is like, I think we all think about our idols, especially like, I'm sure a lot of comedy fans listen to this. I'm sure a lot of comedy fans who've never done stand-up listen to this. I'm sure a lot who have done stand-up listen. But if you've never done stand-up, I think there's such an easy thing to get into, which is how did these people start out? And you kind of think that Jim Carrey probably started out killing every room. And you just have to remember they all bombed a lot in the beginning. And so for me, that was really comforting, you know, getting into stand-up. As soon as you realize I don't need to do good. I met a couple guys who my goal is to bomb tonight. And I was like, what do you mean your goal is to bomb tonight? And they had the best time and they got their laughs and they did bomb, you know, other times, but they had the best time. So if anybody here is scared to do it, just remember everyone bombs.
Now bombing doesn't, a joke bomb, something bombs, it doesn't bother me. And it's just kind of okay. I don't even think about it on the ride home, where before it would destroy me.
Yeah.
But now it's not even a thought.
Yeah. I'd come home and I would just think about, oh, did I say the joke or did I say something really offensive? Like in my mind, I'm like, I must have said something so horrendous. I'll never work again. When really it was like a knock knock joke that just I had the wrong intonation on the wrong word.
Yeah, I do like your bit where you were like, I saw it online where you were like, I think it was on TikTok, and basically you're like, I have abs, I'm not like these other comedians. And I thought that was so funny because there is the notion that you can't be good looking and do comedy. Like that has been said before. It's been proven wrong, but that has been said for years. You know, you can't have both.
But I do think it is a real, especially in open mics where everyone's a little bit competitive. I had a really great, I'll shout him out, Chris Newberg. He was a writer on my first television show, Emo Genius, that nobody watched. And afterwards, when I started doing stand-up, I always remembered him as being so prolific when it came to joke writing. And I told him I wanted to start doing stand-up. He was like, you're going to be great. You're going to bomb, but you're going to be great. And I started doing it with his help. And one thing he goes, listen, man, you're coming up there as a guy who is decent looking. You have a television show. Like, people just aren't going to naturally want to root for you. You're not the underdog. And I was like, okay, what do I do? He goes, you have to knock yourself right at the beginning. You have to say something to bring yourself down to not just comedians level, like it's not about that, just bring yourself down to like what everyone going to a night out wants to do, is like not feel like they're looking up to some guy. They want to feel like, oh, this guy's one of us and he's venting about the same problems we have and blah blah blah. And that was really helpful because I think it's a good thing in life anyway, even if you are you know, a comedian has been doing it for years, like it's just so much better when you can say things that the audience can relate to, as opposed to maybe even not saying either way. I don't know if this makes sense. Does it make sense?
No, like the self deprecation works to like put the audience at ease, you know, that one of us, you know, like one of that, like, oh, he's one of us up there, you know, that really helps, you know.
But then it was funny too, because you know it's like once you know the rules, you can break them. And so I was doing it and Chris was watching one of my shows and he was like, there's one joke, like, I recently lost my job. Apparently no one wants, you might have to cut this part, but I'll say what the joke was. Can you cut stuff?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I can cut. Yeah.
The joke was, I recently lost my job and I would get some, aw. And then I go, yeah, apparently no one wants to hire a straight white guy who masturbates at work. And it would get a laugh. And then Chris said afterwards, there was a line like, people would laugh, and then I said another line that was kind of self-deprecating. There was an aw, and he was like, you know what, why don't you just lean into it and be like, don't worry about it, guys, I own a house in LA, like I'm fine. And he started going the other way with it, and he was like, why don't you once you've done the self-deprecating, you get him on your level, go the other way and just be that guy and see how far you can go before you turn him off. And I also think that's really exciting about comedy, is like learning where the guardrails are, you know, that are after that it's a cliff. And then knowing that changes for every show, that changes with every audience.
And once you win them, like once you've won them over, it's like pretty hard. Like you can do a lot before you lose them again. Like if you really have them on your side, you can like really, but to get them on your side, I mean, if you're not a name or, you know, they're not there to see you, it's hard to get them. It's hard to get them on your side to start.
Yeah.
Hunter, thanks so much for doing this and taking the time. The show is blown away. It is March 9th on Netflix here in Canada is when it premieres. It is a reality show that has like absolutely taken the world by storm in the last couple of years. And I can't wait to see season 4. So thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
It's a good one. And I do recommend watching the other seasons if you haven't seen them. I mean, they're all glorious and beautiful and works of art in themselves. So thank you for taking the time, Chad. I really appreciate it.
Oh my God, that was great. Hunter Marsh. You can see Hunter now in Netflix's Blown Away, which is premiered March 9th, season 4 of the show. Hunter hosts. Phenomenal show. Just, I love these different reality shows where you get to see talented people doing crazy talented things that you couldn't even fathom doing. The sculptures they make, it's a must watch. You have to go to Netflix right now and watch Blown Away. Thanks again to Hunter. Okay. My second interview today, so I produce this show. This show is a small-time show. It's just me. It's just me in my kitchen doing this, and sometimes I take big swings. I try to reach out to people that I would want to talk to, and one of them is one of my childhood heroes. Backstory. When I was younger, my family didn't have Canadian TV. We had an American satellite dish, which allowed us to watch Nickelodeon. Nickelodeon was my life. I watched classic shows on the Nick at Night program. I watched everything on Nickelodeon. I watched every day, all the game shows. I got to go to Nickelodeon when I was about 6 years old and just see the whole production work and everything. And I became obsessed with film and TV, and now I get to work in film. So that's super cool. But one man who is in charge of a lot of those shows, like What Would You Do and Double Dare, was Mark Summers. Mark Summers was the host of those shows, and he was kind of like the voice of my childhood. So I reached out to Mark. I said, "Hey, Mark, I have this little podcast. You have two amazing things you're promoting. Would you like to come on?" He said, "Sure," within like 10 minutes, had a great chat. Mark is currently live off Broadway at the New World Stages until June 22nd, performing his one-man show, The Life in Slimes of Mark Summers. This is a show that I'm hoping to go see in the next couple months when I'm in New York. And Mark has an amazing podcast, Mark Summers Unwraps, where he's interviewed so many crazy celebrities, Howie Mandel. There's a Canadian connection right there. He was on it. Kevin Pollak. It's a phenomenal podcast. It's a little inside baseball sometimes, but that's what makes it great. If you love comedy, and you love TV, and you love movies, you'll love Mark's podcast. I had a blast talking to Mark. It was a huge honor for me. Here it is, my interview, Mark Summers on the Canadian Comedy Hall of Fame podcast. I don't know if you can see. I have my old school Universal Studios.
Oh my God. Where'd you
jacket
get that
on? I got it at Universal Studios this year, but I was a huge Nickelodeon kid growing up and Universal Studios kid, and in Canada too, which is rare because we didn't get most people didn't get Nickelodeon, but my dad had an American illegal satellite dish.
Oh so, my God!
I was able to get it, and we actually went to Nickelodeon. I think around like 93. And saw like the tapings and everything. It was awesome. So,
cool.
Yeah. So I'm just gonna.
Where are you in Canada?
I'm near Ottawa, between like Ottawa and Toronto.
Okay.
Yeah, a town called Brockville in the Thousand Islands. So,
how many times have you interviewed Howie Mandel?
Is speaking with Howie. Have you known Howie a long time?
I used to open for him back in 1976 at a place called Stock Stew in Orange County, California.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Howie started at the Yuck Yucks here, and the stories of him are legendary. Just like doing the baby voice, you know, and that was like back in the day where like comics were like smoking on stage. It was like really gritty then, and Howie was really kind of pushing the boundaries of stand-up.
Yeah, I became a regular at the store in 76, so I started a teeny bit, well, maybe about the same time when he was in Canada, I was already in L.A., but I started as a magician, so I was working at the Magic Castle, and I was opening for Gallagher, and he told me to get rid of the props, which is funny coming from the biggest prop comic at the time, but he said, "How much are they paying you to open for me?" And I said, $150. He said, "If you get rid of the cards and all the stupid magic, they'll pay you $300. So that's when I started getting into stand-up instead of just doing magic.
So magic is where you started?
Yeah, I was a kid magician in Indianapolis, Indiana. And I became a regular at the Magic Castle in 1973, and I was working there. But I was doing more comedy than magic, which upset the Magic Castle because they wanted me to, you know, be pulling rabbits out of hats and doing stuff like that. And I liked magic, but my passion was more about comedy. And they eventually didn't like the fact that I was working there because I was doing 80% comedy and 20% magic. And the store at the time, I mean, think about it, 76, it was Dave and Robin and Jay and Chandling. And it was like the spot to be in, needless to say, you know, at that period of time.
Did you make many appearances at the store there? Was that a hangout?
Oh yeah, I was a regular. I became a regular in 76. Yeah, so I worked there for about 3 years before Mitzi threw me out.
It's funny, I just watched the documentary, that long form one. I think it's on Amazon. They did it on on the store. It's like 7 episodes. It's fascinating, like the 70s there. And Mitzi was a character,
herself. Two episodes were good, and then it slowly went downhill, I thought. You know, all those, I don't know. After that, it just got a little ridiculous. I didn't get it at all, you know, but he wanted to do more and they shut him down, quite honestly. I talked to Binder and don't even get me started.
It's funny because I've heard some Pauly Shore stories recently on this podcast about what a bizarre guy he is. Some people who've opened for him and toured for him.
The family threw him out. He's not even a part of the store anymore.
No, yeah. I think he's been back recently, though, like just to pop in, but I don't know.
Maybe he lives, from what I understand. I was never friendly with him. I mean, he was a little kid when his mom opened the place, and, you know, I remember him running around, but we never interacted.
Yeah, yeah. I want to talk about this Broadway show. So The Life and Slimes of Mark Summers. You've done a lot of things. Is this like the most grueling thing you've done, having to do a show? And only because all the people I talk to, they're always like, this is the hardest thing. Like, you it know, is. When you host TV shows and yeah.
Yeah.
The grind is real.
7 shows a week. I got him to let me get out of the Wednesday matinee. So we do how's the schedule work? We do a 7 o'clock Wednesday, 7 o'clock Thursday, 8 o'clock Friday, a 2 and an 8 on Saturday, a 2 on Sunday, and a 7 on Monday. The only day I have off is Tuesday. And obviously you want to deliver 110% every time you go out there. And, you know, on stage 90 minutes, it's exhausting, but probably the most fun I've ever had. I started in radio. I did magic. I was at the Comedy Store. I did warm-ups. I did Double Dare. I did What Would You Do? I did Food Network for 20 years. So I've done just a million freaking things in the entertainment industry. By far, I enjoy this more than anything I've ever done.
You have is Guy Ferrari involved in this?
He's one of our producers, yes.
There's a little bit of like audience participation in this show, isn't there, where you get people involved? Do you just pull people out of the audience, or are you like screening ahead of time for those?
I'm not screening. I actually have people write their names and on a piece of paper and put it in a big fishbowl, and I just draw them out at random, which is always a little dangerous. Initially, when we started doing this show, I went in the audience and picked them, because back when I was working on Truth or Consequences, I learned from Barker how to look for the best contestants. But they thought it would be more interesting for the audience to come in and think they might have a chance. And they do. I just, once again, it's not fixed in any way, shape or form. We start off very early in the show with one physical challenge. And then in the middle of the show, we actually play Double Dare for about 10 minutes and do a couple of physical challenges. And it's fun. And the people just absolutely love it, because I'm going to say that a majority of the base of our people who come in are in their 40s, and they were kids growing up on the show, and they're reliving their childhood, which it keeps us pretty full every show.
Yeah, it's funny. Double Dare is like the show I think back to, probably because I was at... Now, it's funny because I think I was at a taping in my head, but then when I'm talking to my dad, he's like, no, we were just at like a pre-taping where they would like test the games.
Yeah, they would...
That they were going to play on the show.
And they would test the games and somebody would eventually get slimed, but it had really nothing to do with our show. It was a big sort of, with all due respect, jerk-off. To the public who was coming in thinking that they were a part of Double Dare. It had nothing to do with it. It was just a bunch of Universal employees pretending to be a part of it. They weren't.
Yeah. Okay. So my dad was all right. I was young, so I couldn't remember. I like to ask people this question on every interview I do. And it's kind of my, I guess, gripe with IMDb, Internet Movie Database, that it's never right for everyone. I always say that I had Lorne Michaels on the show and his was wrong. So if his is wrong, then, you know, who else is wrong? But do you know your first credit listed on Internet Movie Database?
I never look at that stuff. I wouldn't have any idea.
Okay, so it's a sub-announcing role for The Joker's Wild.
Not true.
Not true. Okay, that's what I want to know. It's never true.
No, I was the warm-up guy, and Johnny Jacobs was the announcer, but I never announced that show.
Okay, yeah, that's your first credit on IMDb is saying you announced.
I don't know where that stuff comes from. You know, people write in this stuff thinking they know, and they apparently don't. Once again, I don't look at it, but no, I just did the warm up on that show. The first show I announced on the network was on ABC, a show called Bruce Forsyth's Hot Streak. That was the first big announcing gig that I had. But prior to that, I was just a warm up guy.
Was that your first TV gig, kind of?
Doing warm ups?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. I did, Soap, Webster, Star Search, What's Happening Now, Anything for Money, Joker's Wild. I mean, I was known as the king of warm-ups. I did a boatload of these shows. And it was great training as far as being able to think on your feet and kill time, because any period of time you could be out there for 45 minutes trying to keep the audience hot. The easiest show I ever did was the CBS show called Alice. Because they would tape the show in the afternoon without an audience, and then they would just tape the show with an audience to get the audience reactions. And we would roll tape at 7:30, and I'd be in my car at 8:20. It was great.
Sounds like a great gig. Your podcast is great. I've been listening. The Richard Kind episode is so good. I mean,
the best,
I was
right?
Not on more podcasts. People should be all over him. To get him on, his stories are amazing. How did the podcast come about? Was that just like you were looking for something like that at the time?
No, I got asked by a million people to do it, and I said I'm too late to the game. Nobody really cares. No, and I turned them down, and this one team that I'm currently with didn't let up. And I said, okay, let's pretend that I do this. There needs to be a point of view, and so my point of view on it is pretty much what my show in New York is about, and that's overcoming obstacles. That my idea was, if you see Richard Kind on every radio or every TV show and movie you can think of, and you say, wow, he's the luckiest guy in the world, you don't know what he went through to get from point A to point B. And my whole idea is, why do some people just give up and other people figure a way to go over, or under, around, and through the barrier and get where they want to go? And that's been the fun part for me, is finding out these stories where people constantly, I never accepted the word no. I was told no forever. I didn't get double dare till I was 34 years old, and I did a million things to stay alive. Never took a job outside of show business, never worked at Macy's, never was a server. I was a disc jockey. I was a disc jockey in a disco, but I always stayed as close to show business as I possibly could. And, Richard Kind, by the way, that Richard Kind, interview was 3 hours long. We had to take 2 hours out because it got so inside baseball that the general public wouldn't have a clue what we were discussing. I loved it because I learned so much from Richard. He's just a genius. So, yeah. And by the way, it was sort of a turning point. So many people listened to that. It took us to a whole other level, advertising-wise and otherwise. But I've been fortunate to do Richard, do a two-parter with Howie Mandel, to Kevin Pollak was brilliant. We did two with him. I'm having a lot of fun with it. I'm basically doing all the research and making it happen. And it's just a fun thing. I'm not making much dough off of it, but I don't care. I'm just enjoying it.
Yeah, I love doing my show too. It's a lot smaller scale than your show, but doing the research. Like, I had Caroline Ray on here last week. Great Canadian comedian. And, we had this moment where she was like, tell me your new bits you're working on. And so and she was like helping me with tags and stuff. I'm like, this is amazing. This is worth you know, all the aggravation of the podcast, you know, for somebody like that to do that. And I love doing research on people as well. In my research, I saw that you got the you did the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, which I go back. Jay. What's that? Sorry,
I was with Jay Leno, not with Johnny.
Oh, okay. So the internet did me wrong again. They said you were on Carson, but still, Jay, that's doing the Tonight Show is, you know, the yeah, was that when
that was the pinnacle, man. I mean, that's what we all, when we walked into the Comedy Store, the Improv, or wherever we started our stand up, the goal was to get to the Tonight Show in some form of fashion. Would I have rather done it with Johnny? Yes, but they wouldn't even talk to me back in those days. I auditioned for the Merv Griffin Show 14 times and never got it. My first national stand-up thing was a thing called Norm Crosby's Comedy Shop. First time I did stand-up on national TV, Dick Martin introduced me. It was so funny, they would have celebrities introduce certain comics, and Dick Martin introduced me, and we were backstage. He said, "Look, man, I have no idea who you are, and I've never seen your act. What do you want me to say?" I just love television.
That's amazing. How much did like stand up? I like to, people that have like kind of branched out from stand up. How much did that prepare you for everything else? Like stand up is kind of like, if you can do that, you can kind of do everything, like hosting, Broadway, acting, everything. Is stand up like the ultimate proving ground?
Well, I think doing warm ups was better training. Excuse me, because you just get hung out there for hours at a time, and you better learn how to keep an audience. Stand-up is fantastic, and it was the second most important thing for my career. But I was never a big comic. I opened for the Bay City Rollers at the Santa Monica Civic Auditorium, man. I mean, I had some of those gigs. But I was never on the same level as Jay or Dave or, you know, Robin or Shanley or any of those guys. I don't know. They used to call me the accountant comedian. I was the only comedian who was married at the time. I was wearing a suit and tie. Everybody else was, you know, wearing Hawaiian shirts. And, you know, I would come in, I'd do my, you know, 8 or 10 minutes, or sometimes later, longer if we worked the bigger room. And I basically went home. You know, I was married, had kids, and I wasn't hanging out till 3 in the morning. So I kind of took it from a whole different point of view, something I always wanted to do growing up on the Ed Sullivan Show and Hollywood Palace. And I saw those comics and I said, that's what I want to do. Never as successful in that world as I wanted to be, but I was better at being myself, which is why my hosting career took off and I did so well in that arena.
When you do warm-ups, is that like mainly a crowd work stuff to keep the crowd going? Yeah.
Yeah.
To keep them moving, which can be the hardest thing as well. I've had some situations recently where I'm trying to do the crowd work thing and it's just not, you just get that one of those audiences sometimes.
Oh yeah.
I like to leave people on this question. I know you don't know who's in and who's out of the Canadian Comedy Hall of Fame and all that stuff, but when you think of like a comedian who's also Canadian and is a Hall of Famer in your eyes, who comes to mind?
Well, it'd have to be Martin Short.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, the things he used to do when he prepped for the Letterman was unbelievable. And that's why he was such a great guest. You knew something magical was going to happen. And he's had quite a hell of a career. I met him once. He didn't treat me very nice. I was disappointed with that. But as far as a performer, spectacular.
Yeah, one of the best. And I always say probably the best talk show guest of all time, if not top five, right?
Yeah, by far.
On the couch. You know.
Yeah, the one thing I was disappointed in, I saw him do the producers, and he kept breaking character and going into, you know, some of the things he did on SNL and stuff like that. And I thought, you know, if you're going to do, you know, Leo Bloom, do Leo Bloom. Don't break into things, you know. But it would, and by the way, Jason Alexander did the same thing. He kept sort of saying, I know you really wanted to see Nathan Lane. You didn't want to see me. It was too shticky, you know. Jerry Lewis, when he did Damn Yankees, he called the author and said, do you have any advice? And the author said, stick to the script. And I think that's what you got to do. If you're going to do a show, do the show. Come 17 other characters. I saw Damn Yankees without Jerry, and it was great. And I saw it with Jerry, and initially he stuck to the script, but as it went on, he broke out and did 10 minutes of his Vegas act in the middle of it. And some people hated that, said, you know, same thing, just do the words. And other people thought it was hysterical. So different strokes for different folks. But to the original question, you have to applaud Martin Short for his amazing career, certainly what he's doing with Steve Martin right now. You know, my first manager was a Canadian comedian by the name of Jackie Kahane. And Kahane was the guy who kind of took me under his wing initially and tried to help me become a writer for sitcoms and variety shows. And, you know, he was one of the original stand-ups from the Canadian world.
It's funny, we're this small, tiny country, but we've definitely made an impact on comedy and Hollywood. You know, so considering we're population-wise the size of California, we've definitely made our impact. The show is The Life of Slimes of Mark Summers. Is what theater is that in?
We're New World Stages, which is at 50th and 8th, and we're there till June 2nd, and we're selling out many nights. It's going so well. I just can't believe this is happening to me at age 72 that I'm off Broadway doing the show every night. And I just don't even know where we go from here. I mean, they've talked to us about touring and things like that, and I'm just taking it one step at a time. But Alex Brightman, who was the star of School of Rock and Beetlejuice, he's currently in Spamalot, wrote the show for me, and it's brilliant. Mm-hmm. And once again, I'm just having the best time ever.
Yeah, to have a Tony Award winner like Alex involved must be very exciting. Thanks so much for doing this, Mark. I'm a huge fan. I hope to go see the show. I'm going to New York in a couple months, so I definitely
call me.
Let
me know, man. Yeah, I'd love to talk to you after the show.
Yeah, no, that'd be great. Thanks so much. I really appreciate the time today.
You have a great day, and thanks for asking me.
There it is, episode number 40 in the books. Let's run it back real quick. Hunter Marsh is the host of season 4 of Netflix Blown Away, which kicked off March 9th and is currently one of the top 10 shows in Canada. So if you're not watching it, you definitely have to. Blown Away, out now on Netflix. Thanks a lot to Hunter. And then thanks to Mark Summers. Mark is currently in the off-Broadway production of The Life and Slimes of Mark Summers right now in New York at the New World Stages Theater. He also has a podcast that you can listen to absolutely anywhere podcasts are found. Apple, Spotify, just like this one. iHeart, it's everywhere. Mark Summers Unwraps. It's an amazing interview show. He does long-form interviews with friends and great stars of Hollywood, great movie stars. It's a great, great podcast. Definitely should check out Mark Summers Unwraps. Okay, that's episode 40. We did 40 of these. This is crazy. This is mind-blowing. Thanks to everybody who listened. Don't forget to follow it. You can follow me at @NoonanChad on Instagram. Find me on Facebook. Stand-up wise, I'm headlining in Cornwall this week. I'm in Toronto on the weekend. Go to comedynuggets.com for tickets to that show. This is it. That's it. I have nothing else to say. I'm done whitening my teeth as well. Thanks for listening. Episode 40. Stay tuned. Episode 41 coming out very soon. It's already recorded. I just got to, you know, put the finishing touches on it. For the Canadian Comedy Hall of Fame podcast, I'm Chad Noonan.